Good morning and welcome back to our Ask the Agronomist podcast. I am here again today with Phil Long, actually on the phone because he's out in the countryside looking at some fields. How are things looking out there, Phil?
It's looking pretty good. I know we've had some issues here in the last week, that's for sure. Once again, heavy storms, it seems like we can't get away from that. I just drove by a field the other day that was stripped pretty good by hail, so those things keep plaguing us, but I guess that's part of summer, and we're not the only ones that have had some issues. We're still looking pretty good, so.
Yeah, that's for sure. It wouldn't be a normal growing season if we didn't have that.
Nope, exactly.
So what kind of insect or weed pressure are you seeing out there? What should guys be scouting for?
Yeah, so I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the insect pressure. You know, right now, it seems like a key time to talk about it as we're getting ready to head into reproduction for, you know, tasseling for corn and reproduction for beans. They should be getting into that flowering stage, and that's really when, you know, guys should be paying attention to them. Obviously, we just had the 4th of July, but I think, in general, most of the corn's over knee-high, hopefully, in your area. You know, for the most part, this is a good time to really start keeping an eye out, you know, instead of just driving around, getting out in the field and looking. So, you know, just wanted to highlight a few different insects in corn and beans this week, if that sounds good to you.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's start on the corn side.
Sure, yeah. That's probably the one more people get out and look at, you know, they like to see their high corn yield. So,
right.
couple of the ones to look at for corn actually would really kind of affect things down the road in terms of stalk strength, you know, and even ear shank damage would be western corn rootworm, obviously. Those should be hatching and coming up, should be starting to notice them. You know, those ones, those little beetles are going to be feeding on the ends of the silks, you know, which really isn't the what you're really concerned about. You know, there's not really an economic threshold for chewing on the silks. Obviously, it can affect it, you know, shorten them, and they're just going to have to keep regrowing. But really what you're looking for is to get an idea how much is out there, you know. And I know a lot of guys have, you know, if you're planting smart stacks or some of the other traits that we have in our corn, you know, you may not think it's an issue, but it's still a good idea to get out there and scout, you know, keep track of how the refuge is doing and keep track of how many beetles are out there. So that's key, you know, in planning for next year. If you don't have a traited corn that can manage the corn rootworm, then you need to understand what's out there for the end of the season, you know, because you may be looking at some root issues later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a key with the western corn rootworm.
So when do you start to see that type of pressure out in the fields?
Well, like I said, the beetles should be coming out about now, you know. They normally say around the time the lightning bugs are going, and I've been seeing a lot of them. So,
oh, yes.
yep. So they should be emerging, coming up, and starting to feed. You can see beetle damage on the leaves. It tends to look kind of like a translucent feeding. It's kind of like a scratching on the surface of the leaf. You'll kind of notice a little bit of a kind of a translucent color, white parchment-like color on the leaf. You know, you may think, oh, maybe it's a disease or something, but that could possibly be just western corn rootworm feeding. So yeah, right now is really a peak time to be looking for them. Another one to keep an eye out, and I'm going to kind of roll two into one here, is western bean cutworm and the European corn borer, obviously both moths, but we're kind of getting right close to the peak moth flight, and there's been reports and Wisconsin, Indiana, a lot of the universities track the moth flight patterns and stuff, so they're noticing some strong moth flights, especially for western bean cutworms. So something to keep your eye out for, really, the kind of the difference between the two. The European corn borer, when you look for those egg masses, you're going to see them on the uppermost leaves, the newer leaves, you know. That's kind of where the moths target, you know. And the European corn borer is going to have kind of the egg mass is going to be like kind of a glue-like or goo-like substance. It's going to be kind of encased in a goo-like substance versus western bean cutworm, which is just going to be, you know, look like individual tiny little cream-colored egg mass, or, you know, eggs within the mass. So Those are two to keep your eye out for. Obviously, that's not something you can easily just go out and scout, but, you know, as you're seeing moss and stuff, and just as you're walking through the field, you know, keeping an eye out for those two things when you see an egg mass, you know, it helps to be able to identify it. So, you know, going back and looking at some references to find out which one you're looking at will help.
Okay, well, that sounds good. So what about the soybean side of things?
Sure, yeah. So on the soybean side, you know, we have obviously a bean leaf beetle, you know, that's one that kind of hits them all year. You know, I was seeing them early on when they're just coming out of the ground. It's just they stick all year round. They're really not an economic issue most of the time. But that's one to keep your eye out for, along with the Japanese beetles and stuff, could be chewing and feeding on the leaves. But as we're getting close to this time of year, you know, we're here in Iowa, and even if guys up north, I know we're having the Dakotas and South Dakota and North Dakota, they're kind of, and even Minnesota, you know, is having some issues with drought right now, if you look at the drought monitor. And the soybean aphid might be one to keep an eye out for in those stressed areas, because they tend to seek those out. They're going to be moving here pretty soon and getting on to some of those soybean fields, so we'll see how far they make it. I know people will start sending in reports of where they see aphids. I've just been seeing a few reports here and there, but, you know, that's one that's a very interesting insect to me. One of those, like some of the weeds, they just have a really neat way of adapting, and aphids is definitely one of them. You know, I mean, if you look at their life cycle, they start out on the buckthorn plants up north, and then they start to move. They get their wings and move into the soybean field, and just a very efficient insect. You know, when they hatch babies, they're all female, you know, and then every female has more females. So, you know, if you look at it in terms of generations, you can have 15 to 18 generations just here in Iowa and during the soybean growing season. So really an amazing insect, although they do have a lot of natural enemies that can take care of them. You know, it's one that always concerns guys, and I'm sure that, you know, we'll have reports of that as it starts making its way down. But, you know, the key to remember with soybean aphid is the threshold. It's a threshold that's been set and researched over and over, you know, 250 aphids per plant. You know, it's something you want to go out there, and people normally don't want to count, but I've seen people count and then still spray anyway. But the idea behind that is if it doesn't reach that threshold, if the natural predators are, you know, keeping it down, then you probably don't, it's probably not going to hit that. You know, if you hit 250 aphids, the actual economic injury level is actually 650. And the reason for that is if, you know, if you hit that 250, the thought is by the time you get out there to spray, those things are reproducing so fast, you know, like I just said, just because of their nature and how they reproduce, that you're going to hit that 650 by the time you probably get out there and get it sprayed. So,
Interesting. I had no idea. 15 to 18 generations in one growing season.
Yeah.
That's a lot of aphids.
Yeah, they can have several just in a month or so on the buckthorn plants. So they truly are an interesting insect to watch, and just because of their life cycle in that regard. But, you know, that normally they're not an issue. But, you know, if you start seeing them, you know, they're going to show up on those younger leaves. They like the most tender, you know, I guess I think of it as tender and juicy, most nutrient-filled. You know, they're going to the developing leaves. So that's where you want to start counting. But don't freak out if he's got 10 on the top leaf, you know, because if you look below that, you don't see any. You know, obviously you haven't hit the threshold yet. So just some things to keep in mind. You know, that's one that normally keeps people worked up when they start seeing aphids. You know, they are a crucial thing to keep an eye on, especially as you get close to the seed sale time period. You don't want to have the aphids sucking the juices out of the soybean plant as they're trying to move those juices to the seed. So,
right.
That's definitely one to keep your eye on as we continue to move through reproduction.
Well, very good. Thanks for all that information. Is there anything else that you want to add about what to keep an eye out for, or how to be proactive against some of these things?
I think I'd just add, you know, like I said, this is not a comprehensive list. Obviously, I just mentioned a couple. You know, so as you're out there scouting, take a look at it. If it's a different insect, you know, find some resources or give, you know, myself or one of us a call, or your local RSM or dealer or whoever you can get a hold of to find out more information. You know, another thing about the moth flight patterns is most universities keep track of that too. So, you know, depending where you're close to, you may want to kind of monitor what the universities are putting out as far as reports on moth flight patterns. So, you know, which ones to look out for. So just some good things to keep in mind.
Good resources all around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, very good. Thank you for taking the time out of your day scouting fields yourself out there. We appreciate it.
Sure. No problem.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in again this week. To hear some more valuable information, tune back next week. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.